the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. And this week, Social Security and Medicare are back in the news. Now, unfortunately, the news is not great. We're going to update you on the latest trustees report, as well as what's going to happen to your Medicare premiums next year and beyond. We're also going to cover a topic on the show that we've covered before. We want to make you aware of key retirement date milestones in your life that you really need to write down and remember because they're going to affect all of you. We did a show on this a while back, and we got several emails requesting that we repeat that show. So we're going to cover them later in the broadcast. Go ahead and get a pen, a pencil, a notepad. But before we get to those milestone dates, we want to update you on Social Security and Medicare. Jim, let's start with the recent news that everyone is talking about.
Everybody was talking about this, Chris. It probably only lasted a couple days, and of course other topics take over, but it's one that's pretty serious. It just came out. It says that Social Security's costs are expected to exceed its income beginning in 2020 for the first time since 1982. Now, many of you may not remember, but back in 1982, I think it was 1984, that there was a Social Security fix. Now, one of the things that they did is they raised Social Security taxes. They also raised the level of income of which Social Security was subject to taxation. Right now, it phases out roughly at about $130,000. So that was the fix that was put in 1984, and that was supposed to last us a gazillion years. Well, it's not. This is going to force the program to dip into its $3 trillion trust fund to cover the benefit shortfall. Now, let me explain what the trust fund is. There is no trust fund. All of the surplus revenues over the years that were paid into Social Security, the government spent them. And then what they did is they issued an IOU in the form of a treasury bond. These are special treasury bonds that are owned by the trust fund. So when you see, for example, you hear that the national debt is $22 trillion, about $5 or $6 trillion of that belongs in the Social Security Trust Fund and other trust funds. So what will happen next year, in order to meet the deficit, the trustees will go in, take one of those bonds, sell it in the open market for income to pay out benefits. Now, here's the good news, if there's any. The Social Security Trust Fund was supposed to start exceeding revenues in 2018, but thanks to the lowest unemployment and a growing economy, the program took in more tax revenues in 2018 and 2019. However, we've discussed this on the show with the people from Social Security, and the date at which Social Security needs to cut its benefits has also been pushed out 2 years. Originally, it was going to be 2033. Right now, the trust funds will be depleted by 2035. Now, what does that mean? By 2035, if nothing changes, Social Security will only be able to pay out 75% of the benefits currently being paid out or promised unless Congress takes steps to, let's say, secure funding of these popular programs. Now, the cost of both programs are expected to soar, as you can imagine, in the next decade and account for the majority of the government's budget deficits. Currently, both programs make up about 45% of federal spending. You add in interest on the debt, that's about 65% of all government spending. However, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the two programs will account for 90% or more of the budget deficits in the next 10 years. Now, just to give you an example of how important these programs are, last year, 52.7 million Americans received Social Security checks, 10.2 million Americans received disability checks, and almost 60 million Americans were covered under Medicare. And here's another one. Their trustees report that Part A of Medicare, you don't pay for that. That was included in your Social Security taxes that were taken out of your check when you were working. But Part A of Medicare will be, that's the part that pays for your hospital, will be depleted by 2026. And of course, by 2035, the two programs will equal, this is how big they'll become, they will equal 11.6% of GDP.
This is really sobering when you think about, I mean, take a moment just to think about how many Americans are dependent on these two programs for their retirement. I mean, in one form or another, I mean, whether it's income or medical expenses, it just really gives you pause. What about the idea, though, and it's come up in this presidential election cycle, I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot about it, as we already have been, but about Medicare for all. In other words, medical for all.
You know, Chris, I don't see that happening soon. I mean, it's great for elections. I mean, what do politicians do in a presidential election? They hand out candy and kiss babies and hand out lollipops. And so, you know, it's great to say, hey, everybody's going to get it. We can't even keep what we have funded to 2026 for Medicare Part A. Social Security will start exceeding its expenses next year. And by 2035, they will have to cut benefits. Imagine if you took away healthcare benefits for 360 million Americans, put them on a government program. You can just imagine the inefficiencies and what that cost is. So if the existing system is broken 6 years for, let's say, Part A, or it's going to be short of money by 2035, how are you going to make it any better by expanding enrollment without dramatic increases in taxes, healthcare premiums, which is what we should be discussing next?
And as you've mentioned, with these programs really having major issues, what is being done right now to address those issues?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. When it came out with the trustees report this week, I think it made headlines for, you know, a small portion of the news for maybe 1 or 2 days, but they're basically doing nothing. And they won't do anything until there's a crisis, for example, as they did in 1984. And when they do, they'll take draconian measures to fix it and probably overreact. The one issue that needs to be done, and that is to raise the Social Security age. When Social Security first came into being in 1933, the average male life expectancy was age 65. Today, it's closer to 85. So they need to raise the minimum age and the full retirement age to reflect the fact that people are actually living longer. It's one of the problems is people are drawing down Social Security over a longer period of time. I mean, I have clients in their 90s, and we have one client in a retirement home will turn 100 years of age this year. So they did that already, Chris, for boomers and Gen Xers. They raised the full retirement age to 66 and 67 from 65. Now, they also actually should be investing the money they take in an excess, sort of like what the Canadians do with their pension system. They actually have real investments, not IOUs. The U.S. spends the excess money, and then they issue IOUs to the trust fund. So there really isn't any savings. It's not like they're buying corporate bonds, investing in real government bonds, investing in maybe blue chip stocks or infrastructure, kind of like the Canadian pension fund does. They have actual real investments, and they've done quite well. The U.S. basically spends the money, but increasing the retirement age to reflect longevity goes a long way to extending the solvency of the system. They are also going to need to increase premiums for Medicare, which they are currently now doing. So just a word of caution, folks, you are going to see major increases depending on your income level, and we're going to cover this next, in your Medicare premiums. Beginning this year, you've seen an increase. They're going to get even bigger next year.
Well, yeah, let's get into that then, because my understanding was that years ago, the pricing system changed based on income, that you pay into it based on how much money you make. Is that still the case?
It is. And basically, that came in when they added Medicare Part D to handle the cost of prescription drugs. Now, what happened, we used to have a single-tiered pricing system. Everybody paid the same price. Now, we have 6 different tiers of pricing. So, for example, if you make under $85,000, if you're single, and it's roughly about $170,000, if you're married, the premium is going to go up by $1.50 from $134 to $135.50. So it's going to go up $1.50 a month. So it's not very much. Now, here's the bad news. For those individuals that make over $85,000, in $175,000, your premiums are going to go up from $189.60 to $202 next year. So they're going to go up roughly about $13 a month. Then if you make over $107,000 and $214,000, the next bracket, it'll go from $270.90 to $288.50. So you're basically going up about $20. Now, watch what happens in the next bracket. And the next bracket is for people that make over $133,000 if you're single, $267,000 if you're married. The premium will go from $352 to $375 if you make over $160,000. If you're single, $320. If you're married, it is going to jump from $433.40 to $461.60. Now, if you are Larry Lots of Bucks and you make in that category $500,750, watch out. Your premiums are going from $460.50 to $490.50. It's going to go up $30.50 a month. Or roughly, it's going to go up by about $3,500 a year. So if you are in the upper income brackets, you are going to be paying close to $1,000 a month for Medicare premiums, and you will end up paying well over $300,000 for your Medicare premiums over your lifetime. And Chris, this does not include Medigap insurance, because Medicare only covers about 60% of your cost, nor does that include Medicare Part D.
Geez, those numbers really seem out there. I mean, the reason why I say that, Fidelity does a study on out-of-pocket healthcare costs every year. For this year, it's around $280,000 over a retirement lifetime. But the numbers you just cited, it sounds like Fidelity's number may be way too conservative.
Oh, yeah. The number they quote for $280,000, those are the people that are in the first tier bracket. That's under $85,170. You'll end up spending $280,000 out of pocket. However, if you're in those upper income brackets, because there's six tiers of pricing for Medicare, you could end up paying two to three times that number. In other words, you may end up paying $900,000 or close to $1 million in premiums if you're in those upper income brackets. If you are a couple making under $170,000 and a single $85,000, well, here's the thing. You should be putting away in your budget $11,000 to $12,000. In other words, if you're, let's say you're a couple, you're spending $80,000 a year to live on, vacations, etc., you should include in your plan an additional $11,000 to $12,000 you put aside in a bank account, because you're going to need that, especially when you get into what we call the go slow years, 75 and older, and especially when you get into the no-go years, 85 and over, because that's when that money is going to come in handy. These are going to be out-of-pocket expenses for Medicare premiums, Medigap insurance, and you can bet if Medicare is going up and they're covering less and less of your expenses, your Medigap insurance is also going to go up. And that $280,000, as I mentioned, includes Medicare, Medigap premiums. It includes, for example, the cost of procedures or treatments or drugs that are not fully covered for Medicare or Medigap insurance. Insurance companies may not cover a new drug. Let's say you have a particular disease or ailment. There's a new wonder drug that comes out. It's very expensive. Medicare doesn't cover it, nor does your Medigap. If your doctor says you really need it, that's going to come out of your own pocket. If you look at your Medicare and health costs, they're going to be rising between 6 to 8% a year, and they hit you when you enter the go slow years, especially 75 years plus all the way into your 90s. That's when you really need that money, and those put aside savings are really going to come in handy.
You know, Jim, there seems to be something wrong with this situation. I mean, it seems like there needs to be some kind of reform. We can't have seniors struggling in this regard. I mean, and when I say reform, I mean whether it's the price of drugs, treatments, general medical care expense, even frivolous lawsuits to help bring down the cost of medical care. But as you've been saying here on the program, it is a cost that needs to be factored into any retirement plan if you don't want to go broke later on. And especially if one of you ends up in a retirement home. These are just really, really serious concerns. What also about the impact, Jim, of when one spouse passes away and there were serious medical expenses before their passing?
You know, this is an issue, Chris, that we should probably cover in a separate show in the future. But one area that affects most couples is when the first spouse passes away, there's a loss of income from Social Security. Now, in most cases, it's the husband that passes away first, because if you look at 85% of the survivors on Social Security are women. That's why once a year we do a special program with Social Security on what every woman needs to know. Because in many cases, if you're listening to the program, you're the wife, you're probably going to end up being the survivor. So let's take a case, an actual case that happened where the husband's Social Security was $26,000 a year. His wife got half of that, so her Social Security was $13,000. Husband passed away. She's now the surviving spouse. In this case, the wife has the choice of taking her husband's Social Security, a $26,000, but then she loses her own Social Security of $13,000. The problem in today's low interest rate environment, she would need $400,000 of an additional capital to replace the loss of that $13,000. And I can't tell you, if you haven't planned in your retirement plan for the death of the first spouse, this is really an important issue that needs to be put into your plan, because in this case, this client actually lost $13,000. She chose to take her husband's Social Security at $26,000. But as part of the plan, we kept in force an old life insurance policy of $500,000 on his life. And the reason was to replace the loss of income at his death. Now, when he passed away, his widow received the insurance proceeds. They were tax-free, and we were able to replace the loss of income because she gave up her own Social Security in favor of his. And this is a very important tool for many of you. If you're thinking of long-term care, most long-term care policies, they don't make money for insurance companies. It's one of the problems that General Electric, they used to issue long-term care policies. The company's literally losing billions of dollars on the insurance that they wrote. And there are policies out there, and we like them. I think they're more workable and they're more flexible. They're actually life insurance policies that have a living benefit, meaning that, let's say you had a $300,000 policy, and when you die, the insurance company knows they're going to have to pay out $300,000. But what they do, they have a rider. It's called a living benefit rider, and you can access that $300,000 during your lifetime for long-term care. It's tax-free, and it's also something that you can use and tap into when you need it, because the insurance company knows they're going to have to pay $300,000. With this rider, they're going to say, hey, look, you're in trouble. We might as well just start paying it out now. Any unused portion is paid out to the survivor. If you don't end up in a long-term care facility, well, then your wife or your beneficiary receives the proceeds tax-free on the death of the insurance. Or, as we mentioned, in the case of needing long-term care, the policy can be used to offset the cost of long-term care during the insured's lifetime. And we find, Chris, this is probably a more flexible approach, because you never know, you know, what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to end up in a long-term care facility, or, you know, you pass away suddenly as a result of some unforeseen illness or a long-term illness.
So that really can bring peace of mind to folks about what the future may hold. But let's go ahead and sum up here, Jim. The Social Security and Medicare system is obviously headed for financial difficulties in this next decade. Next year, Social Security expenses exceed revenues, and both programs run short of money by 2035 and will only be able to pay out 75% of benefits for Social Security. Now, in the meantime, the cost of Medicare is going to start rising substantially for Americans making over $85,000 if you're single and $170,000 if you're married. So you better include rising medical expenses for your later years in your retirement and savings plan. Now, let's move on to the topic of important dates regarding retirement planning. We've received several emails regarding this topic requesting that we repeat them. So now's the time to get out that paper, pencil, or pen.
Now, this is really important because there's 9 key dates that affect your retirement, your taxes, your Social Security, Medicare, all kinds of things. And the first one I want to bring up is age 50. Because at age 50, if you are contributing to a 401k program, you can put an extra $6,000 tax-deferred in a write-off into your 401k. So right now, for 2019, the limit is $19,000. If you're 50, age 50, you can add another 6,000, making that up to 25. The next age that is important is age 55. And what that does, at age 55 or older, you can take money out of your 401k program or other employer-sponsored retirement account without the normal 10% penalty. Now, you're going to have to pay income taxes on that, but you can avoid that 10% penalty. The other thing that happens at age 55 is you can put an additional $1,000 into a health savings account. Now, that's if you qualify and have a high deductible health insurance plan. You can put $4,350 in an individual health savings account and $7,650 to a family HSA, let's say for you and your wife. Now, the nice thing about that, with all those itemized deductions done away with tax plan that was passed in 2018, this comes off the top, so it really helps you. The next thing that you need to know is at age 59 and a half. That is the age that you can start taking money out of your IRA pension program without paying an additional 10% penalty. So we've covered age 50, 55, 59 and a half. The next important date is age 60. That is, if you are a widow or widower, you can collect Social Security survivor benefits as early as age 60. But bear in mind, if you take it at age 60, you're probably going to get close to 29% less than what the full benefit would be if you took it at full retirement age, which today is probably 66 or 67, depending on your age. Now, the thing that you want to be careful of before you take this is if you are working. You do not want to take it if you're working, because if you exceed, I don't have the number in front of me, if it's 10 or 12,000, 15,000, depending on the age, they start phasing it out. So if you're working, you don't want to take it. You want it to accumulate, which means you'll get a lot more money. The next age that is important is age 62. That is when you can access Social Security if you must and you need it. But bear in mind, at age 62, you're only going to get 75% of your full retirement benefits at age 66 or 67. The other thing that happens at age 62 is you become eligible for a reverse mortgage. These are government type sponsored programs where you need to, let's say you want to live in your home, you want to tap the equity in your home, use it for income, paying expenses, but that happens at age 62. Now, age 65, you become eligible for Medicare. Now, you don't need to go on Medicare if you're still working and covered by an employer plan. But if you are not working, you need to make sure you enroll during the enrollment period, which it begins actually 3 months before the month you turn 65, includes the months you turn 65, and 3 months after. If you don't enroll, you could be subject to a penalty. The other thing is, at age 65, you can no longer, and you're on Medicare, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account. The next two ages, age 66 and age 67, are the ages in which full Social Security benefits are given. So in other words, you don't lose any. So that's age 66 and 67. Two more dates. Age 70 is the final age in which your Social Security benefits will no longer grow by 8% if you defer taking your Social Security. After age 70, let's say you're working, you don't need it, and you're deferring it, it'll only grow by the cost of living. So usually at age 70, we recommend you take it. And then finally is age 70 and a half. At that point and going forward, if you have an IRA, you are going to have to take mandatory distributions from your IRA every single year. If you don't, there's a 50% tax penalty on the amount that you should have taken out. And this is one of the reasons, by the way, we recommend you consolidate all your IRAs into one IRA account so you don't make that mistake. Because I've seen people that have paid penalties on not taking out enough. They take out maybe, like for us, with our clients, we make sure that their RMDs are met. We have a program that alerts us, so they take out 100% so they don't get that 50% penalty. But a lot of times people have, oh, I forgot I had a CD at a bank, or I had money at a mutual fund or something, and they forget to take that money out when they turn 70 and a half. Guess what? Not only do you have to take it out, but you're going to get assessed a 50% penalty on the amount you should have taken out. So those are the key retirement ages. As we mentioned, they begin at age 50. I hope you write these down because, you know, whether it's contributing more money to a 401k program, an extra amount of money you can put in a health savings account, or not taking out money without paying a tax penalty, or full retirement benefits, or growing your Social Security. Every one of these dates are important, and they should become a part of the planning process prior to considering retirement, and even when you are retired.
Well, a 50% penalty. Talk about a motivator to get something done. Well, on tomorrow's edition of Lifetime Income, we have Ashley McHugh. She joins the program to talk about the importance of staying active as you age. She also discusses longevity as it relates to running, how you can start a running regime to add years to your life. And she also discusses some other exercises you can do to increase muscle mass and stay fit.
Yeah, I just signed up for a 401k run.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, 401k, okay.
Gotcha.
You did.
Well, you know, once again, folks, we hope you had a chance to write down some of those dates. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.